And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be talking poetry today. We have with us three poets in our studio, and they are the current Poets Laureate for Kenosha and Racine. Nico Moore, Poet Laureate for Kenosha, Mary Skillings, and Thomas Carr, who are Poets Laureate for Racine. So they operate under what's known as the KR Poets Program, which Nico tells us has been around since about 2011. And it is, of course, a means by which all of us can come to a deeper understanding of and appreciation for poetry and the way in which poetry can really enhance each of our lives as individuals and can also play a role in kind of knitting together the community, helping us to kind of see the world and each other maybe in new and illuminating ways. And of course, poetry is also something that can just be plain entertaining and fun. And we'll certainly be taking some time during today's program to actually hear poetry from our three Poets Laureate. And we do want to make mention, and we'll remind you a little bit later in the program, that they are sort of officially unveiled as Poets Laureate in an event scheduled for February 22nd, 6:30 to 9 at Vintage and Modern Books, which is in downtown Racine, 415 6th Street. But today you get a little sneak preview of our three Poets Laureate. So Nico Moore, Mary Skillings, and Thomas Carr, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
Dr. Thomas Carr is a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage College, and for frequent listeners to the morning show, he is no stranger. But he is obviously wearing a very different hat than what he customarily wears when he visits the morning show as director of Carthage's paleontology program. Professor Carr, I must confess, I had absolutely no idea that this was a part of your life, that this was another facet. I had not even a glimmer of suspicion of it. And even though your work, I understand, has been published in The Centric, a Carthage publication, which I frequently investigate, somehow your poems have just slipped past my radar.
It was a while ago.
Well, at any rate, I'm going to begin with you just because you're the morning show veteran here, and then Nico and Mary can see how it's done. Mm-hmm. But I'm really anxious to know, first of all, at what point in your life poetry entered the picture, and to what extent it has folded into what is obviously the primary professional passion of your life, which is namely paleontology.
Yeah, it always sort of been there in the background during childhood. And I guess when I was around 16, there's sort of a confluence of encounters with poetry. I worked at a small sort of grocery store in sort of northern Ontario. And that summer, I read Homer's Odyssey and also Peter Matheson's Far Tortuga, which is a fictional tale of turtlers from the Grand Caymans who head out to get turtles, but it's written in a prose poetry style in combination with illustrations like waves, sunrises, sunsets, that sort of thing. So it brought together prose poetry and visual art, which calls to mind, you know, the traditions of ancient Egypt and Mesoamerica, and that made a strong impression. I also inherited a box full of albums, which included album by The Doors, and so I was encountered Jim Morrison's poetry. I think he's quite skilled. So that's early, and in undergrad, I had a faculty advisor who gave me as a gift, because I did a reading there, a small volume of Derek Walcott's work, Nobel laureate from St. Lucia, and also Ben Okri, his African Elegy. And so that kept the ball rolling. And in grad school, in the last year of my PhD, I just couldn't take it anymore. that is the grind of just getting a thesis done. And so I started to write a bit more. And so throughout all this, I was writing and started to do spoken word, open mic, sort of thing, which I hadn't done before. I had a friend who encouraged me to do that. And I continued that a little bit when I started at Carthage. There was a student-organized poetry group. I attended a few of those meetings, but I had no nerve to read. But after a while, you know, I missed the stage, getting that sort of immediate feedback and connection with people that an open mic can provide. And so I've been involved on a voluntary basis with Grassroots Open Mic, which is hosted by Family Power Music. The host is Nick Ramsey, who's a former laureate. And so this whole enterprise, this artistic enterprise, has been quite focal in the past year and a half, 2 years.
Right. Very good. Again, I knew absolutely nothing of that, this side of you. And it's just really fun and intriguing to hear about this. And I hope I have a chance to talk even further about the way in which this work has folded into, you know, the side of you professionally that most of us know very, very well. Your partner as Racine Poet Laureate is Mary Skillings, and let's hear from you. At what point in your life poetry became something of an interest?
I think I would say that as a student, you know, the margins of my paper were always filled with, you know, things that I was writing and never really thought about it as poetry. After high school, when I went to college, then I got a sketchbook in which I would sketch but also write. I don't like writing online, so it was always blank pages. And, you know, I never, ever thought that I would share it. It was just like something that I did for my own processing and my own healing, and never really felt that I wanted to share it. And then over time, you know, one journal became two, the small one became a larger one. And so now I have a collection of those. And then became a teacher. I'm from a family of teachers. And one population that I taught, that I love teaching, is students who come to this country and are learning English for the first time. And then that just, you start to think about words in a whole new way. I sometimes think those who have the most limited amount of language can put words together and say things most beautifully. They play with words in a different, they look at words in a different way than we do. Because they're learning them. I taught high school, so with a high school brain. And so, so I've always been fascinated by that. I teach Spanish as well, so like how words play together. Just like when Thomas said the word turtlers, was that the word you used? I like how that sounds, and I started thinking about it. How would you say that in Spanish, and how does that, you know?
Yeah, really.
So that's kind of just how my mind works. And so writing in general has sustained me through the most difficult times of my life. So
very good. I remember reading something similar in your biography, Nico Moore. You're the poet laureate for Kenosha. Tell us something about your earliest encounters with poetry and what it was that drew you to it.
I think early on, you know, I was just a student of rap music, you know, and so, you know, when I was younger, I would dance and sing and try to rap along, and you know, I think at one point, I wasn't a very good student educationally. You know, my spelling and my handwriting was not well. I didn't have very good skills in those areas, but I tried my hand and like, okay, I'm gonna write a rap, or you know, And that, you know, it just grew, I think, over time. And, you know, I have a history in theater and choir, and those things kind of formed my, I think, my comfort on stage and in front of people. And then, you know, poetry kind of left my life as far as, like, me wanting to express, because I was expressing other people's words. And that's a lot easier because it's all right there. You don't have to think about it. You can just recite it and memorize the lines. the choir director tell you to sing the song and some notes and all that, but it became necessary to get back to writing once I had my first child. I just needed to process life in a way that I didn't have access to any other way, and just writing became that thing. And a lot of it was frustration. You know, I needed to get that out. How am I going to process through these in a healthy way? And when I don't have anybody to talk to, maybe, or there's too many thoughts going on one time, I just need to write them out. And, you know, it looked like chicken scratch, but then I'm like, oh, wait, this is actually something. And it kind of became something, and I found myself sharing it at open mics, and, you know, it just became a part of my life and a necessary part of my growth.
For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, we are meeting the Poets Laureate of Southeastern Wisconsin, Nico Moore, Poet Laureate for Kenosha, and Mary Skillings and Thomas Carr, who are the co-Poets Laureate for Racine. I want to ask each of you, and we'll start with you, Nico. We'll go back in reverse order now. As you have written your own poetry over the years, at what point did you get serious in the sense of wanting to do it better, of sharing it with someone who might give you insights or advice or guidance, if ever? Or have you right from the start just, you know, written as you have felt moved to write and not worried about, in a sense, the craft,
the
or
ladder,
achieving excellence or whatever? I'm curious to hear about this for everybody, but Nico, let's start with you.
Definitely the latter. I'm rebellious in nature, so you know, anything I do is kind of like, okay, well, I want to do it the way I feel called to do it. And poetry was kind of the foundation of that for me. Writing was like, all right, I'm not very technically, I don't even know these words. I'm going to have to maybe have to look some of them up, you know, but I'm going to use, I kind of think to what you were saying about language, I'm like, I have an adverse, you know, kind of feeling about the English language sometimes. And so I'm going to jumble these words up. I'm going to use them in ways that, you know, that maybe people would not expect them to be used.
Or break the rules or whatever.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Break the rules and be very, like, free. And that opened me up, opened my heart, really. And I went through this kind of phase of writing from anger. And then I just, like, eventually it just became this. I think that was the process, the progress, was, like, opening myself up to, I say, love, you know, because it came from a place of fear. And the writing, I kind of told myself, dictated myself into a place of growth and healing. I think it was what was happening.
Very good. How about you, Mary Skillings?
Honestly, it was 5 months ago in August when I took the handwritten words from my journals and typed them up for the first time. Mm. So, like, to actually see it typed on a piece of paper, like how it would look in a book, is very recent in my life. And then the passion to share it. Oh, I'm still working on that. but as a teacher, I think it's necessary to be vulnerable with my students every day. And so that is helping me share what I've written so that they have the comfort and the permission to share what they also need to share with the world and connect that way. So, but yeah, this is all the like putting it together on paper and like seeing it and reading it is very new in my life.
Right. So let alone sharing it with a poetry instructor.
Yeah.
So you have not done anything like that.
So it's new, but I'm open to it. And I'm so far, I think in life when, you know, you move in a direction and then it takes you that you're on the right path. And so that's how I feel right now with poetry in my life.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thomas Carr, as you began writing, did you ever take this to the level where you asked for feedback and wanted to, in a sense, elevate the quality of your writing? Or have you always felt comfortable just kind of doing it as your instincts led you?
Yeah, I guess it's always been a meandering course. It was pretty serious. So in early high school, I had a friend who did write poetry and songs, and I guess I saw one or two things of his, and I realized, well, this is something I could do myself. And from that point forward, I didn't look back. And the quality of the work was always a concern. And so I'd been writing relatively frequently, and it wasn't until maybe halfway through undergrad where I took a look back at all that stuff, all those notebooks. I had to start a notebook that fateful summer when I was 16. It was following Peter Matheson, I had a little set of watercolors, and I would make like little images of birds and albatrosses and things. And I was working on sort of this epic poem called The Story of Four Suns, sort of based on the Aztec destruction and recreation of the earth. So I had that and, you know, a couple hundred pages, and I took a look at it all in undergrad, and I realized all this really ought to go in the fireplace. And so there it went.
Wow.
And so, poof, all that was gone, but I felt, you know, released from that and just kept going and had more of a concern with quality. And I still feel like I have training wheels. I've taken on the task of reading sort of my pantheon quite closely, which includes Anne Sexton, Ted Hughes, Sylvia Plath, Leonard Cohen, Derek Walcott. And so I'm reading them very closely to see what is it in their work that makes me swoon. It's not magic, because there isn't such a thing, but there is technique. And so at the current time, I'm almost done reading the collected works of Anne Sexton and taking notes all the way through in the hopes
on
of
what you like. I mean, like,
yeah, what hits and what is she doing that really, you know, makes me swoon? What elevates the art above and beyond the page, or beyond black marks on the page? And so I'm engaged in that process still. And I still feel like I have training wheels on. So we'll see where they take me.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are speaking with three Poets Laureate today. For Kenosha, Nico Moore. For Racine, Mary Skillings and Thomas Carr. And very shortly, we're going to be hearing some poetry. In fact, probably right now, we should hear something from you. And Mary Skillings, we're going to begin with you. Yes, we're going to begin with you. Looks like you have several things you've brought along with you today. And what would be one that you would like to share with your fellow poets and our listeners?
I grabbed several because I didn't know how I would feel about what I would want to read. Let's see. I'll read a poem called On the Lake. This is a very recent poem. I have the privilege right now of living across the street from Lake Michigan in Racine, and so I've watched the lake daily, and I understand now why every single sunset and sunrise there are cars that come down there and park and watch the lake. I grew up near the lake, but I didn't realize how much it's positively impactful. Just gives me pause every day, and it's been significant. So yeah. I wrote this poem in November, called On the Lake. The day after a hard rain awakens with a bitter sunrise, one that's shy, yet angry that it must continue being revolved around. And then late afternoon, the blue on the lake is solid and deep and won't accept any questions, not even the ones everyone asks. When evening is no longer early, the blue on the lake, impossible to reproduce, shines and shimmers carelessly and complements the soft pink sky. The night after a hard gray day, tucks in an unsettled sunset, one that's resigned, yet hopeful that it must continue being fallen upon.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how that took shape. I mean, you obviously, it's a very detailed, illuminating assessment of the lake and this, you know, particular aspect of it. Did you notice something in particular, and then kind of did it grow from there? I mean, how did you end up shaping that?
Yeah, most of the when I write, it's either like all at once it happens, or it's like it seems to like appear in a spurt, and then it's kind of brewing there in the background, and then it will like pop out later, and I'll finish it. And that this one was like the latter, so I noticed color on the lake a lot, and so it started there, like the change of the color throughout the day, one particular day, and then. I couldn't kind of wrap up the last part of it, and I was at a concert. I went to a concert alone in Chicago in November, and right before the concert, as I was sitting there excited for it to start, it just I was like I came up. I needed to wrap up that last part.
Ah.
So I don't know. I can't really explain why that happens like that, but sometimes it happens like that. So, but it is kind of based on the color and the weather and how that changes. Like recently, the frozen waves on the lake are incredible to watch form.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Wow. Well, beautiful. And of course, you really need to, I mean, this seems like a unique to you in that, I mean, this perspective you have day after day watching the lake, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. it's not a poem I could ever write, that's for sure. But you with your particular perspective, I mean, this is in a sense a really deeply personal poem, even mm-hmm. though it's not about you yourself, mm-hmm. but it is something seen very specifically through your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think poetry can do that. Like people can connect to it. And then there's also pieces of this that like you'd really, really have to know me to catch some of the finer details in there, but they are not necessary to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, but for me, there's yeah, so.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Nico Moore, do you want to share a poem with us?
Yeah, I was inspired by your lake poem. I didn't know what I was going to share this morning.
Ah.
And yeah, I usually, when I go to open mics or I'm going to a space, I usually wait until I get inspired by the energy or the or some kind of cue I'm in the space. So I'm going to share one about the lake as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's always cooler by the lake. Today it's breezy near the water's edge. I got this love song playing in my head. It's always more peaceful by the lake. Down by the lighthouse, feel the breeze flow through my emotions. I think to myself, that's the closest some will ever get to an ocean, a great lake to throw your thoughts, fears, and hopes in. Therapeutic are its sounds and its motion. Lakefront, close companion to everyone. Welcoming one and all, no matter where you come from, no matter who you are. If you came from near or traveled from far, you're short or tall, you are welcome regardless of your last choice. The tone of your skin or the tone of your voice, come chill by the chilly lakeside and come alive. I reside in this town that sometimes lacked motivation. The lakefront was my safe haven for inspiration. To see the water meet the sky is a visual my spirit's craving. So many lives that this lovely lake has taken, so many lives it has saving. A vast balance of memories this lovely lake is making. It's always cooler by the lake. That's that piece.
Wow. Very cool. That's neat the way that sprang out of the first one. That's great. I should mention to our listeners, you weren't reading it. You were reciting it from memory. Is this a poem that is always the same? I mean, is it set in stone? I mean, the way, for instance, Mary's poem is words on a page, or is it a little more fluid and organic?
Yeah, it's definitely it's a living thing. I think it changes and shifts. There's lines that enter and lines that come off, depending on how I'm feeling. But mostly it's you know, it has a structure in its own, but so it's kind of a guideline more than a set thing.
Yeah. Do most of your poems utilize both singing and speaking in the way that this one does?
Yeah, for the most part. Sometimes I might not sing. Sometimes I might, and sometimes I might sing louder. Sometimes I might sing softer. You know, and so, yeah, but I definitely like to express in as many ways as I possibly can. And sometimes these poems are put to music, so I might play guitar, or I might have an instrumental backing track that I made or someone else has made, and yeah, so I like to diversify it.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Maybe before our time is up, we can talk at some point about the difference between a poem and song lyrics. Mm. Are they Are they absolutely indistinguishable one from the other, or is there some difference? But
it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Thomas Carr, what poem would you like to share with us?
This was written on a flight back from Morelia, Mexico, back to O'Hare. And I'd spent a week as one of several keynote speakers at the national paleontology congress. And I'd never been to Mexico before, and I can say it was a transformative experience. I realized to myself that I'm not really a North American without Mexico. Mm. And it seems, you know, anyhow, so I wrote this in a melancholy mood, 30,000 feet up, and it's written with alternating English and Spanish stanzas. Now, I can't read or speak Spanish. This is Google Translate. But I've always wanted to hear it read the way it was written. So, Mary, do you mind, like, reading the Google
on the
Translate?
Spot, I can try.
All right.
Sure.
So,
I'm not a native Spanish speaker, but I can go for it, yeah.
We'll make it work.
So, okay.
This is called Verde Blanco Rojo, which matches the country's flag. Verde is the abundance of the purposeful life. Blanco is the wedding dress of the sun. Rojo is the laughter of the dead, when the dead laugh with the living.
Green es la abundancia de vida con propósito. White es el vestido de novia del sol. Red es la risa de los muertos cuando los muertos ríen con los vivos.
Grief. Grief at 30,000 feet. The airplane falls, flies like a falling stone.
Dolor. Dolor a 30,000 pies. El avión vuela como una piedra que cae.
When we live, the skeleton is borrowed. When we die, the skeleton we keep.
Cuando vivimos, el esqueleto es prestado. Cuando morimos, el esqueleto que guardamos.
The land is as borderless as a cloud. The people are as borderless as the land.
La tierra es tan ilimitada como una nube. La gente no tiene fronteras como la tierra.
Our arms are around our friends when we are living. Our hearts are around each other when we are dead.
Nuestros brazos están alrededor de nuestras amigas cuando estamos viviendo. Nuestros corazones están alrededor del otro cuando estamos muertas.
We greet with the shout of a ripping flag. We part with the cry of the distance.
Saludamos con el grito de una bandera rasgada. Nos separamos con el grito de la distancia.
When you cry, I will cry. When you cannot love, I will love. When you cannot live, I will not live.
Cuando no puedes llorar, voy a llorar. Cuando no puedes amar, me encantará. Cuando no puedes vivir, yo no vivaré.
And that's that.
Wow. Really cool. And just a more of a mundane question right off the bat. So where did those Spanish words come from then, if you claim not to have any facility with Spanish itself? So did you write those words and then change them to Spanish?
Yeah, that's the beauty of Google Translate. Like, copy, paste, and boom, there you go.
Wow. And was it the same? Were those Spanish words, in a sense, a Spanish translation of what we were hearing from you, or were that, or were those stanzas saying something different?
As far as I understand it, it should be saying that same thing.
Okay. So so Thomas was reciting something, and then you were, in a sense, reciting it in Spanish, or close to it then.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you just you typed it in English, or put it in English, and then put it into Google Translate and clicked Spanish. Yeah. Which is a beautiful thing. You can it is fascinating you can do that. Although it does also make you think about language in weird ways, because you know, you can put something in there and you want it to mean one thing, but what it bumps back is literal and isn't necessarily
the phrase, it loses something in the translation.
Yeah, well, sometimes there's things you can say in one language that you can't. You can't get it. There's just said better in a certain language than another language.
Right.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
It's in my world of music, that's very, very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm curious that, Thomas, it sounds like you wrote this at a point where you were experiencing some loss or sorrow or something or other. And I know from the other two poets, in both of your biographies, you talk about poetry being something that was a means of healing. And I'm just curious, I wish we had a long time to talk about it, but at least briefly, I'm just curious, how does the act of writing a poem bring about healing when you are writing something at a point when life is difficult or you've experienced some kind of a loss or whatever it might be? Just curious what anybody has to say about that.
I don't. For me, it's something that I don't think I consciously chose. Like I remember when my mom was dying 11 years ago and taking care of her, and just waking up and having words being put together in my mind and having to write them down. Mm. Just having my journal next to me and just putting them, and like in the morning being like trying to decipher what I'd written, because I was, you know, scratching on a piece of paper in the middle of the night. But like something about getting it out, I don't know if it's just the process of it, or just, you know, driving in a car and having some emotion overload me and just having to pull over on the side of the road and write it down. I don't, that's how it happens for me. And
sure.
Then, yeah.
Nico is vigorously nodding.
Yeah, it's the release of it, I think. It's, you know, it's something that, like, you know, I tend to feel these, like, energies, these emotions, these feelings are alive in us, and they want to say something. And it's like translating, you know, from one language to another. It's like this energetic language that is in translate, and sometimes it loses the meaning of or the feeling in the translation. But that's, I think, the challenge of a poet or a writer or a musician or an artist is how do we, or even visually, like how do you get as close as possible to that, you know, to what was coming through. So I've kind of lended myself, I call myself a vessel of these emotions, and I tend to do that at this point for the collective, especially as now as a poet laureate. I feel like I want to come into a space and observe the world, observe my community, and interpret out into to that healing space.
Give voice to those
feelings. Yeah.
Very good. Let's hear another poem. Mary, do you have a second one you want to share with us?
Sure. Since I mentioned my mom, I'll read one I've never read before that is a poem that I compiled when she was dying. So it's a little, well, it's 11, almost 11 years old, but... And I remember when my aunt died a decade and a half probably before my mom, my cousin telling me that every day since his mom had died, he thought of her. And that seems so simple, but just him saying that out loud, I don't know, it was really comforting to me to be like, oh, she's physically not going to be here, but she is still here.
Mm.
And she continues to be here if I do think of her every day, and,
right,
but consciously do that and give myself permission to do that. Mm-hmm. So this is called Sleep on Her Stomach. Going barefoot, swimming, being in the sun, reading the newspaper, sleeping on her stomach, wearing makeup, wearing a bra, baking, brushing her teeth, going shopping, decorating the house, Swiffering the floors, writing out cards, petting Prince dog, going upstairs, talking on the phone, singing, sleeping with her mouth closed, going anywhere, walking, laughing, talking, hugging. All that my mom was forced to give up the year cancer took over her life. Just wanted to sleep on her stomach, for Christ's sake.
Mm. Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. And I can see how writing something like that is a way to both express and address that sense of loss that you were feeling on behalf of her and the loss you were feeling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow. I'm guessing that was a poem that just poured out of you.
Yeah, it did, because I observed all those things. I mean, I observed her having to give all that up. And so, yeah, was a flood of realization that happens. And so, you know, some of the simplest things that we just take for granted.
And what I especially loved about that poem was just the starkness of it.
Mm.
That helps us feel that loss even more than if you had gone on and on and on and on and on. There's just this spare quality to it that I think is just absolutely perfect for what you're talking about. Marvelous.
Thank you.
Nico.
I'm often confused with hate, especially when it comes to violent crimes. I paralyze your body when I take over your mind to survive. It's love I need to steal. I can make false evidence appear real, make you sacrifice your happiness for illusion of a good deal, make you feel pain, then forget how to heal, helpless human, hopelessly controlled by me. I give you two choices, at least two choices you can see. As long as you fight or run, you will never be free. They say I'm second to love. Well, look at this world. I disagree. I know I'm not the voice that you truly want to hear, but you cannot shut me out. I'm your faithful friend. Fear. I will show you things love is way too blind to see. All you have to do is agree to follow me. I consciously, personally need to breathe out fear and breathe in love. And I let love respond, and love says, I am far from blind. In fact, there's nothing I can't see. I transform every being that believes in me. I help you become what you dream to be, the most priceless resource, and I am free. Every living thing would agree it's not money that makes the world go round, it's really me. I am the dirt, the seed, then I become the tree. I'm the process that recycles life. When it's time to die, I am the caterpillar, the cocoon, and the butterfly. To find me, you can look low or you can look high, but most of the time I reside inside. I am the spirit of forever, the setting of the sun, the rising of the tide. My goal is to overcome all fear, help the living to become more alive, create below the flow that exists above, the purest of all energy, and I am love, and you are love. This is love.
Mm-hmm. What moved you to write that? Anything in particular that you had experienced or something you'd seen in the world?
I think, yeah, I'm an only child, so I have some deep experience with like fear and being alone in that, to the point where I felt like those voices and that energy kind of became a part of me and kind of spoke through me at times. The fear poem came first in a whole separate time. And I'm like, when is love going to going to respond, like, you know?
Yeah.
And
answer the charges.
Yeah, like, and I'm like, wait, like, and it came kind of in that flood kind of sense where, like, the first thing was like, you know, yeah, like, love is far from blind, you know, and I'm and I felt that from lived experience, and it took me living and having some deep experiences with kind of challenging myself to go towards that fear and overcome things that, you know, that, yeah, that were challenging me and looking at me like, okay, what are you going to do now, you know?
Yeah.
And so love just, yeah, kind of came through maybe even like a year later, you know, like after some things, you know.
Well, so. I'm glad it's all there. Yeah. That's beautiful. Wonderful. Yeah. So
now
wonderful.
It's, now it's one thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Thomas.
Yes. All right. I'll just scrolling here and trying to find something that's not so gloomy. That's kind of hard to find. Maybe something that's, if I can find it, it's maybe a little bit funny.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Sure. Funny is good.
This is called The Three Muses. And who are the three muses? Of course, there is the immortal lover, and there is the immortal mother, and the third and most important is a drunk girl who smokes in bed. Her black hair is as tangled in indigo and opal as a nest of hot wrestling cobra. Her smile brines in catalog card rows and rows of Fabergé tiger shark teeth. She's the one who thinks you're stupid and laughs at you, and as you fall asleep, kicks your ribs with her cold feet and has you peel Everest of seedless grapes that she'll never eat. But most importantly, she's the one who serves defeat. Quote, the immortal lover, you're not doing it right. You aren't thinking the way she thought. You aren't feeling the way she felt. The immortal mother, you're not getting it right. You aren't thinking the way she thought. You aren't feeling the way she felt. The only way to do it is to think the way they thought, feel the way they felt, as if you were never in their lives and never crossed a feeling of theirs or a thought. The artist is a rotten little tooth that must be pulled out of their life. That's it.
Wow. You know, what's really interesting is I mean, first of all, this I didn't even know you were a poet. So just, you know, Thomas Carr being a poet right there is just this big, wonderful surprise to me. And then beyond that, that Thomas Carr writes a poem like that. I mean, it's interesting how sometimes a poem, it just feels like, oh, yes, that is the voice of so-and-so. And I, no one else in the world could write that poem. And then there's poems that seem to not exactly come out of nowhere, but that seem to defy who you otherwise are. I mean, it sound like if I read that, I would never in a million years think that Thomas Carr wrote that poem. Did you consciously feel like you wanted to write something that was, in a sense, at a distance from who you usually are, in a sense?
I suppose. I guess with the artistic creative process, so a lot of this stuff does arise out of the dark. And for me, it takes a lot of work to even just hold a thought past a stanza. And this, like a lot of what, this is in a manuscript of a book that I'm, of poems I'm writing. I'm aiming for 100 pages, I'm at 83. And sometimes this just lands on the page. You know, it's all there. Maybe it needs some polishing, and I'm very self-conscious about polishing work, but sometimes it just arrives and presents itself, but it does take work. It does take a certain strange sort of concentration to basically stay with that dark cloud of whatever it is. You know, at the end of the day, art is the result of neurotransmitters and neurons. It's all neurophysiology. And what I found over the past year is when I really focus on reading closely. And I write a little bit every day. That's part of my daily routine. It doesn't matter if it's just one line or one stanza. I write a little bit each day and just see what arises. And I find that with the close reading and in maintaining that discipline, that it does get a little bit easier to produce work. But then again, as you point out, sometimes it just arrives from an unexpected corner. And I just think that's evidence of the activity of the brain. It's always working on things below our notice.
Mm. Well, it's so exciting. It's probably one of the most exciting things about this whole wonderful artistic expression of poetry is that it sometimes is a straight path, straight out of our own heart, and sometimes comes from places we don't even fully understand. Well, I am just amazed at this array of voices that we have around the table today, and I wish we could go on and on and on and on, because I know each of you are a wellspring of all kinds of great and wonderful poetry, and so distinctly each your own. So we want to remind people that they have the opportunity to meet you in a more public fashion in an event coming up on February 22nd at Vintage and Modern Books in downtown Racine. That's at 415 6th Street, a free event that begins at 6:30, where you will be talking about yourselves and your experience as poets, reading and or reciting and or singing some of your own works for those who gather there. So we hope that you will mark your calendars accordingly to meet our three poets laureate here in southeastern Wisconsin: Nico Moore for Kenosha, Mary Skillings and Thomas Carr for Racine. It's been wonderful to have you here and to celebrate this this beautiful and wonderful art form. And we wish you the very, very best as you continue to share your poetry with the community. And thanks again for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you. Appreciate you for
having
us.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for having us.
Next week on The Morning Show, a very busy lineup of some really exciting guests. Beginning on Monday, my guest will be Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, who is the superintendent of the Kenosha Unified School District. And we'll be talking with Superintendent Weiss about the very important non-occurring referendum that voters will be giving their verdict on February 18th. And we hope that you'll make a special point of listening to that conversation on Monday. Tuesday and Wednesday are both devoted to Wisconsin author Michael Perry, responsible for a number of best-selling books, including Truck, A Love Story, Coop, A Story of Poultry and Parenthood, and many other wonderful books. He is coming to perform at the Racine Theater Guild on February 1st, and we will have a newly recorded interview with Michael Perry, as well as excerpts from some of my past interviews with him. And next Thursday and Friday, we will have contrasting views presented on the proposed gas power plant in Paris. We'll hear from someone from We Energies, as well as from someone from a concerned environmental group. That's next week's morning show schedule. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. And don't forget, you can hear the podcast version of The Morning Show 7 days a week. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Sunny skies today and a high of 23 degrees. A few clouds overnight with a low of 16. Tomorrow, under partly cloudy skies, a balmy high of 36. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha.